Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, if yesterday was a banging night out that ended in A&E, I think today, day six of the 2021 Australian Open, the first fully crowdless day, I think today was the New Year's Eve house party that you feel you have to go to because it's New Year's Eve. So you show up, you do the rounds for a couple of hours, and then you sneak off to a bedroom and go to sleep.
Or it's just the hangover the day after, where you just sort of sit there and just drink cups of tea and not answer any calls.
The hangover the day after the banging night out that ends in A&E.
Yeah, where you're just trying to sort of pick up the pieces and clear up the mess.
Yes, okay. Hmm. Well, that maybe works better.
And wait for your next party in a day's time.
Yes. It's the regroup day.
Mm. It's freshers week when in my case, you have one big night out, you think that's it, and you can just have a normal week, and then you find out you've got to do it again the next night. But so what you do is you just insert little rest days.
Yeah, I don't understand human beings that enjoyed freshers week. Genuinely look back and say, I enjoyed freshers week. I don't understand that on a human level.
Same. They walk among us, Catherine.
Apparently so. It's not that I didn't enjoy today. I just, I don't know. There were no crowds. We knew there were going to be no crowds. That was a shame. How much was the fact that there were no crowds a contributing factor to the fact that today was a bit of a damp squib? I mean, this has been the damp squib half of proceedings.
Yeah, that's very true.
We've made no effort to conceal that on the podcast. You know, there have been highlights. We'll big those up as best we can on today's pod. But how much was it the crowd, David?
I think it was definitely part of it in that. You know, we're all. I did feel a bit of a downer just because yesterday was so exhilarating, and it has been such a lovely feeling to have crowd noise again because we've been without it, and it has delivered this last week. So that was in the back of my mind. I mean, there were moments I commentated on in the way that I would have done with a crowd, and then there was silence, and I had to say, oh, I forgot there's nobody here. You know, quite open because it's, you may as well just be honest and admit it's weird. It is weird. At the same time, I feel like for people like us, certainly me anyway, I shouldn't speak for you two, but I love watching the sport so much when it's tight and when the stakes are high that not having the crowd gives me something else. And we definitely tapped into that at the US Open and throughout some of the other events because kind of we didn't have any choice. It's either embrace that or be down about it all. And if you actually listen and watch, and especially today, as this was the first match I've ever seen of Nadal at a Grand Slam, and we had it at the O2, but at a Grand Slam, especially with the little question marks about the back and all that sort of thing, and being pushed as hard as Cameron Norrie could possibly push him. I loved just watching Dal compete in this raw style without any cutaways to the crowd or anything. Just so pure to be able to... I felt like I'd sneaked into his private match and could just watch it. And so I got something from that, and I was intrigued by some of the matches, but exhilarated? Not really.
And it is more pure than other Grand Slam tennis, or any tennis that we've seen without crowds, because they were unprepared for this. There's no attempt to conceal the empty seats. There's no crowd noise track on standby. It is exposed before your eyes and ears.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with David. There's certainly something to gain depending on the match. I feel like I got most of what was to gain out of it from last year. You know, we'd had a few months of it and I'm kind of ready for crowds again. But certainly the Nadal match, I agree with David there. The Medvedev match, which we'll get on to, ended up being quite helpful that there weren't crowds, because you could actually hear what was going on and really see what was going on. But then I think the one that really hit me today where we missed crowds was the night session on the Yvonne Goolagong Arena, where we had Barty and Dumanoir back-to-back, and home players playing not in front of their own fans will just leave me sad, and I think have an impact on those matches. We'll come on to talk about it, but yeah, it was a pretty depressing sight on that court, I thought, this evening.
And maybe that is why they scheduled it not on those matches, not on the main court. That will remain a bafflement, I think, why those two matches were not on the main court. Dumanoir Fanini was the disappointment of the day for me. Little teaser there for you to keep you hanging on till we talk about it later in the show. Should we start with Nadal, given that you've already mentioned Nadal? Nadal, he beat Cam Norrie 7-5, 6-2. 7-5. Cam Norrie said before the match that he wanted to show the world what he's got on the biggest stage he's ever played on in his life, crowds or no crowds. He's never played one of the big three before. This was a huge moment for him. I feel sad that he was denied the roar of walking out to a full stadium and being present for Nadal walking out to a full stadium. But yeah, he showed the world, he did what he intended to do. He did the best he could do. He showed the world what he's got. What he's got is nowhere near what Rafael Nadal's got, but that's okay.
Absolutely. He won Rafael Nadal's respect out there today. Everybody goes onto the court with Nadal's respect to a degree, because that's one of the reasons Nadal is so great, that he's able to not walk on with any preconceptions that he's just going to wipe somebody's backside off the floor, off the court. You know, he doesn't go out there thinking like that. That was a terrible turn of phrase. However, moving on, he
I can't stop thinking about it now. The logistics of it.
Let's just pretend it didn't happen. However, what Norrie did, he stood toe to toe with him for four games, and then he broke him for 3-2. And he was playing like Nadal. Hurtling around the court, slashing his forehand as hard as he could, hitting flat, big backhands, and just he played his own game, and he played it to win, and he played it to impose himself and not let Nadal dictate. It's just that Nadal has another gear or two, and he was able to just immediately break him back for 3-all. And there were a couple of moments where I sensed that Norrie was just shaken to the boots by what he was facing, because he's doing all he possibly can and he's trying to be aggressive. And Nadal has that ability to either counterpunch off your big right hand and just knock you flat on your back, or what he does a lot is just absorb it once, get back to neutral in a rally and then take over. But Norrie can be proud of himself. He went out there and he won Nadal's respect when they shook hands at the end of that match as just a competitor. There was never a moment that Norrie backed down and went away. And from Nadal's perspective, he was enthused by and encouraged by his back. I think he said this is the first time, didn't he, that he feels like the back's improved.
Yes, he said today is the first day that he's felt an improvement in his back and that he can do his normal service motion again, which, as Matt pointed out on Twitter, is a good new.
Yes, exactly. And this comes after he took a day off yesterday for the first time, which he hoped would make a difference, and it seems to have done.
Taking a day off is... Federer started that craze, didn't he? Wasn't it at the O2 a couple of years ago? He was like, oh, I've discovered this,
yes,
this new thing of not practicing.
It was after that match where he'd played Nishikori and hit himself in the face with a ball that he was playing so badly.
That was barely tennis, that match.
He decided that actually not playing would help him play better.
Mm. Slightly different circumstances. But anyway, not practicing is the new practicing. Who does Rafael Nadal play in the next round? He now plays Fabio Fognini. Fognini beat Alex Dumanor 6-4, 6-3, 6-4 in, frankly, a match that needed crowds. I know Fognini said after the match, it was better for me without crowd, I think. And look, he's probably right. But I think he would have played better.
I don't know.
Really?
Everything. I didn't see it, but everybody I heard from said how well he played.
Oh, yeah. He was absolutely magnificent. I mean, seriously.
Oh, wow. His top level.
Yeah. I feel like we've had the full Fabio Fognini experience in the last couple of days. One match ending in a war of words. And this was just a masterpiece of a performance. Really, I was high on Dumanor in this tournament, in this match. Mm. David Ferrer has got an 11-0 head-to-head record against Fognini.
No way. Really?
Yeah. And, I mean, Dumanor is not a carbon copy of David Ferrer, but there are definite similarities in terms of the style of play that he adopts and the approach to the sport.
Matt, I'll have you know that Alex Dumanor is the fastest server in the tournament so far.
Yeah, I was checking that speed gun today. He was getting nowhere near 238 kilometres per hour.
There is an official graphic circulating.
Even he was laughing.
Alex, yeah, he was. Yeah, I mean, it's. But I don't know whether the graphic's wrong or whether the speed. Mm. There was a speed gun incident. But anyway, those are the official statistics.
Yeah, but so yeah, I mean, I thought Dumanor would be able to really frustrate Fognini, extract some errors, but Fognini was having none of it. He was pulling him all over the court, lashing winners. He was amazing, really. And there's this debate, isn't there, about who benefits from no crowd. And I think of Fognini as a bit of a showman who needs
absolutely.
A crowd. But I think for him, he can often get distracted by a crowd and he can get carried away with showing off. I mean, he was deeply impressed with himself today. You know, he was strutting around the court, but there was no one to give him that extra something. So he stayed focused on the match, I thought. And he was absolutely wonderful. And I thought Dumanor could be a block for Nadal. Now that Fognini's there, Fognini's actually a player who has caused Nadal problems in the past. I think perhaps in our mind, those problems are exaggerated. I mean, overall, the head-to-head is very strong in Nadal's favour. But Fognini's done a couple of things that people don't do against Nadal. He's beaten him on clay and he's beaten him from two sets down at a slam. And I think those have really stuck in our mind as big, impactful results. So he could trouble him for sure.
Hannah on our Twitter said, some Fognini backhands down the line are so clean and crisp, I became a better person just watching them.
Yeah, it was a joy to watch, really.
I mean, Fognini can make you feel that way, can't he?
He can make world-class players look ordinary.
Yeah.
If you think what he's done to Murray in the past on a couple of occasions.
Yeah, in Rome, I think, and that match that we watched some of, David...
On
the centre court at Wimbledon. I know Murray fought his way through that, as it turns out.
And Davis Cup as well.
I was going to say, the Davis Cup. Not many people have beaten Murray in Davis Cup. And Fognini, I think, did in straight sets, didn't he?
I've just written Nadal versus Fognini. Yes, please, in the notes.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I think you said, Matt, the two sets to love behind result. I mean, Fognini deserved that, but that was Nadal... In his trough, really, the difficult time in his career when he lost his confidence completely and lost his nerve, I felt, at that point. But if Fognini comes out and plays the way he can, we could be in for an absolute belter.
And I should say, we are now just two matches away from another all-Italian clash. It is just Tsitsipas and Nadal in the way of an Italian row.
Could you imagine Berrettini against Fognini? Could you just imagine?
Matteo Berrettini is through to the fourth round, courtesy of a straight sets win over Karen Khachanov. Not as straightforward as a straight sets win might make it sound. This was despite an abdominal injury. After the match, Berrettini described the injury. He said, "I felt here, under my rib, something that pulled, but the physio says that it's nothing that pulled, just maybe something that the muscle is not working properly. But I was really feeling it when I was serving, and then my mindset went a little, you know, away."
I loved that match. I mean, it was two Goliaths just in a slugfest, Khachanov and him, and they were just heaving the ball at each other. Stupidly, I didn't look up the head-to-head and decided to pick Khachanov to win the match. And I thought Berrettini was really, really good because he withstood what Khachanov was throwing at him, and he was the man. He was the alpha out there, ultimately. But then at 7-6, 7-6, 4-5 down, he then has this trainer on to give him this treatment in exactly the position that Novak Djokovic was getting his treatment last night. And he was clearly in some discomfort. And there was a real chance. If Khachanov had extended that to four, I'm not sure where we would have ended up. But he just wouldn't go away, Berrettini. He just hung in there.
Djokovic went off court for his treatment, David, whereas Berrettini just sort of didn't skip a beat, whipped his shirt off and turned it into a sort of calendar shoot.
Got his abs out.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to take my shirt? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Done.
Not an issue.
No. Do this all the time.
Karen Khachanov playing injured opponents.
Yeah. Who else
does that happen against?
The one that sticks out for me is when he played Jannik Sinner at the US Open and Sinner was cramping. And look, Khachanov ended up winning that match. But I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying Sinner couldn't move. I remember he got a time violation because he couldn't get to the baseline in time to serve. And yet he was still managing to win points because Khachanov was not playing it particularly, well, at all, tactically, intelligently. And I felt like a similar thing happened today. It was a very brief period because, as you said, it happened late in that third set and then Berrettini managed to sneak it through in a tiebreak. But there was definitely more, I thought, that Khachanov could have won. And if he could have snuck that third set, as you said, who knows where Berrettini would have been physically in that fourth set. That felt like a missed opportunity for Khachanov.
He is too rarely not the alpha on court, Khachanov, I think, given who he is and what his game is.
Yeah, agreed.
There's a disconnect there.
He's got Kyle Edmonds' coach, old coach, when Kyle got to the semi-finals of the Australian Open, and it's a similar job, I think, trying to make this guy with these weapons and this physical presence, and obviously even more so in the case of Khachanov, because he's such a big, strapping guy, making him as dangerous with his game and with his presence as it could be. And he still isn't. He still comes across as a bit too nice, really. He tried his heart out, but he was beaten narrowly, even in a straight sets match. But Berrettini just believes in himself more, I thought.
It's a good advert. The success of Berrettini and Fognini is a good advert for the ATP Cup as a warm-up tournament for the Australian Open. Berrettini now plays Stefanos Tsitsipas, who put in just a very professional performance to beat Mikhail Immer. 94 minutes, no fuss, empty stadium for his post-match interview, and he looked really relieved about it, didn't he? It was a different, his whole demeanour was different for that.
Yeah,
post-match interview.
Hit all the right notes in that interview because he made it. I was slightly worried that he might say, "Oh, I much prefer it without any film," you know, or something like that.
I was thinking the same. Don't say it. It's okay. We all know it to be true, but you don't need to say it.
Yeah. No, he got it right, and he said, "I'll miss them, and I hope they're back, but, you know, I've got a job to do, all the rest of it." But the first set was tight. I mean, it was 5-4 before he broke, and he was playing his lockdown practice partner in Immer, and you could tell they were pally at the end, but Immer just doesn't have the firepower. I mean, he looked like a junior in those next two sets. The most interesting thing for me about Tsitsipas is his net game, his athleticism, but even more so just his kind of movement and anticipation. He just covers the net, I think, the best of all these players. And I still feel like it's a really underdeveloped part of his game, which could be the piece that ends up winning him major titles, I think, because I think it can separate him from Thiem and Medvedev. The rest of his game may not be as good, but that bit may well help him overcome.
He's got good instincts at the net, I think, and about when to approach, that some of the others sort of do get there, but it feels like it's not on autopilot. It's more analog, and for Tsitsipas, it's digital. It's kind of, you know, slightly more instinctive for him. So Tsitsipas plays Berrettini in the other half of this bottom half. You might call it a quarter. We have Andrei Rublev, who won through in straight sets over Feliciano Lopez. Rublev doing what he does, beating all the players that he is expected to beat. Still a cracking run from Lopez.
I saw one rally, and it was about 24 shots long. And Lopez just running, being made to run. You know, he's 39 years of age, and he's being made to run from pillar to post. And he's digging his little slice backhand up in order to stay in the rally and trying to find a way to get into the net or hit a forehand. And Rublev just won't let him. And eventually he just decides to go for broke on his drive backhand and hits the back fence. it's the shot that apparently Andrew, Twitter contributor in America, was watching ESPN, and apparently that made Brad Gilbert say that when he coached Andy Roddick 18 years ago, he thought Feliciano Lopez had the worst backhand he'd ever seen. and that he'd actually improved it significantly. I mean, I always remember it as that. I mean, it's still a real weakness. He's got a great slice. But I remember then he played Tim Henman at Wimbledon one year, and suddenly this single-handed backhand drive came alive in this one match, and he just managed to pass Tim at the important moments. But the fact that he's there in the third round, 39 years of age, and he's a tournament director, he gave a great account of himself, and he's a top bloke as well.
By playing this tournament, he's extending his own record of consecutive Grand Slams played. It's either 75 in a row or 76 in a row. I can't remember. But does it go back to 2001? Does that sound about right? Where he's not missed a slam? It's extraordinary.
Amazing.
That'll take some beating one day.
Professional though, Rublev, isn't he? You're right. He doesn't lose to people he shouldn't lose to.
Yeah, really sweet moment in the on-court interview afterwards. Have you seen this? I think I sent it to you all.
I haven't seen it. What happened?
Well, he was congratulated on the win by the interviewer, who isn't somebody I know. And he sort of really sheepishly, sort of really teenagery. You know how sort of 14-year-old boys just don't know how to talk to grown-ups or girls. And this was a grown-up girl. And he sort of doesn't make eye contact and he goes, "Thank you, how are you?" And
slightly off mic,
yeah. And she's obviously like, "Oh, this isn't the direction, but I don't want to be rude and not acknowledge the fact that it's..." So she goes, she'd sort of already started asking her next question and then backtracks and goes, "Yeah, I'm fine, thanks." And he realizes he's messed it up and goes even more sheepish and sort of starts playing with his hair. It's like I imagine if you've got kids and you sort of invite some your friends over for dinner, and you know your 14-year-old comes down the stairs and you say say hello to Helen and Mike, Josh, and they sort of shuffle and go, oh, hi, how are you? It was a bit like that. It was sort of adorable but deeply uncomfortable.
He does. I've never met Andrei Rublev, I don't think, but he does seem like a nice lad.
I really like him. Yeah.
He's another one whose off-court personality doesn't match up with his sort of on-court ruthlessness and relentlessness.
Fury.
He's, as you said, he's timid off-court and he's anything but when he plays.
He now plays Casper Ruud for a place in the quarterfinals.
Oh, that'd be good.
Ruud beat Radu Albot. Unexpected for me.
He's under the radar, Alter.
That was my big prediction overnight.
That was that was a shocker, that was, Catherine.
Yeah, what were you doing?
I panicked.
Were you distracted or something?
It was really slim pickings overnight.
It wasn't slim.
No shit.
I mean, come on. Offense to Radu.
It was knee-jerk.
Casper
anyway.
Ruud has had a really... Americans would say he's had a low-key good year or something, wouldn't they? You know,
I think it's young people, not Americans.
Is it?
Say that.
All right.
I mean, probably also American young people.
Young Americans. British people wouldn't say low-key, would they?
Yeah.
He's had a low-key good year. No.
Yeah.
Would they?
Back me up here, Matt.
I feel like I probably need to say something here, don't I? Considering I'm a young British person.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might say that, yeah.
No.
I might, David.
Oh, I'm so rattled by that. But anyway, Casper Ruud is one of those that's way exceeding, I think, most people's view of what he would end up becoming.
I'm not sure I ever formed a view of what he would end up becoming. Did you?
Well, when have we ever hyped him up? Before the French Open last year.
But I also didn't not hype him up. I just never...
No, but when he got to the French Open last year and putting Dominic Thiem under great pressure and looking like almost a mini team, he doesn't let you down. You know, he shows up and he gets to the round of 16, you know, and at tour events he's getting to semi-finals. I feel like he would be, over the last 12 months, I know we've gone a lot without tennis, but I would say he's one of the most improved players in tennis.
Yeah, agreed. But I also agree that I don't have huge expectations or low expectations of him. It's just sort of watching his career play out, I suppose. But yeah, he's good. He's very good.
I'll make it a priority to form some opinions about Casper Ruud.
Particularly for the clay court season, because he's going to make inroads there, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Noted. It's on my to-do list. Now, the last remaining men's little section that we are yet to discuss involves Daniil Medvedev, who is the tennis podcast listeners, or certainly the listeners that are on Twitter, favourite for the title.
Are you about to quote a pole vault?
Yeah, to show up the... ludicrousness of pole vault. I mean, I have picked him for the title, but not because I think he's the favourite. He is obviously not the favourite.
Oh, so your opinion's all right then? But
well, I didn't vote in the pole vault, obviously.
Independently going and sourcing it.
Okay. Well, Daniil Medvedev, the listener's favourite for the title, won his first ever five-set match overnight. He beat Filip Krajinovic of Serbia. He was two sets to love up. And I did see bits of this, and I've watched back highlights. I wonder if he, at two sets to love up and cruising, thought, this could be a good opportunity to get over that five-set hump, Daniil. Why don't you lose a couple of sets and storm back and win the fifth, six love? That is the only plausible explanation I can find for what happened in that tennis match. Does anybody else have any other suggestions?
Did you see it, Matt?
Yes, I did see it. And I think what happened is, as you said, he's two sets to love up and he's absolutely cruising. Krajinovic definitely started to play better like a lot better. He really started to dictate the points, and Medvedev was quite passive, just putting the ball in the court. And that seemed to be the trigger for sending Medvedev into a spin. And he really started to spiral out of control there for half an hour or so. He was doing an awful lot of exclaiming in various languages, English, French, and Russian, which we could hear all of it, as I said earlier, because of the lack of crowd. And most of it seemed to be directed towards his box, where Gilles Savara and, is it his wife? I think it's his wife, isn't it? He's married, Medvedev, yeah, were sitting. And so he loses that third set. Filip Kranovic is on a roll, and Medvedev is spinning out of control. And then an extraordinary thing happens, and Medvedev's coach grabs his bag and heads out the stadium. And it was very unclear at the time whether Medvedev had ordered him to leave or whether he'd left
to go to the toilet.
Given he'd taken his
bag, David.
Given he'd taken his bag, I assumed he was gone. But whether he'd just had enough or he'd been told to leave, I wasn't sure. I think it's emerged that he thought it would be best for Medvedev if he left. He took that decision himself to leave because my presence here is just making Medvedev angry for some reason, and he needs to calm down. And Medvedev's one of those people who, as we know, he can blow hot and cold very, very quickly.
Yes, I'm going to quote you here, Matt, because unlike David Law, you're too humble to quote yourself. on Twitter, you said, nobody loses their shit and then gets their shit together so extremely and hilariously and quickly as Daniil Medvedev.
Yeah. And I stand by every word, because while this was going on, I was cracking up. It was hilarious. It was really funny.
Because on his own, he would just suddenly go, unbelievable! Unbelievable!
Yeah, it was exactly that. That is a brilliant impression, David. Also, for those without the benefit of the Zoom we're currently on, David was throwing his hands up in the air, just like Medvedev did, looking to the sky when he said that. And the thing about Medvedev is he knows that it doesn't help him to get angry, but he just can't control it. And then suddenly he can snap back into gear, and he was every bit looking like someone who could be in the conversation for the favourite for the tournament in the fifth set. He destroyed Krajinovic in that fifth set and was brilliant. The gear changes are extraordinary.
How much of a factor was the medical timeout he took at the end of the fourth set in that gear change? John McEnroe all but said that it was a strategic medical timeout. Hannah on our Twitter, I think it was Hannah at that time.
It was Andrew.
Oh, Andrew described it as a medical timeout for brain cramp.
Look, he was 5-2 down. It was two sets to one up. He's 2-5 down. He takes this medical timeout. He's down on his stomach. He gets his back pressed a bit, and then he goes off the court to have it dealt with. And there's quite a long break. I don't know whether his back's bad. I'm not in his head. That's the really difficult thing about all this
stuff.
I'd
love to be, though.
But by that time, his coach had already left, and I think his coach had just become his excuse to moan. He was just there for him to moan at. And yeah, I think extricating himself and making him just face up to the match on his own terms. And again, it's the one thing about the five-set format. Personally, I like it. Some hate it. You have room to moan and feel sorry for yourself. And then suddenly you've got to focus your mind because there's the finish line. It's coming. I better get back in gear. And yeah, I can't believe that it didn't disrupt Kranovic's momentum. It's hard not to. But Medvedev was brilliant when he came back out. So clearly his back's not that bad, is it? And yeah, I think it probably was at least partially a strategic way to break it up.
I think it might have been his glute that he was talking about, the trainer said to him, would you like to go off court for this? And he said, well, if you think I should, rather than, you know, get his arse out.
Berrettini would have gone, no, you're fine. Shorts are off.
Let's do this.
Medvedev had some interesting things to say about cake in the post-match press conference, said he's realised the importance of diet and eats really well during tournaments. But then when he lets himself go, he really lets himself go and said, I'm one of those people that's really annoying because I just eat like five chain eat cake and I can't seem to put on even a pound. So I hate him. Danil Medvedev now plays. He said he's got five cakes in his hotel room.
I mean, you had a pack of six the other day for your birthday.
Yeah, and I'm eating them, but he's got them in his hotel room and is saving them for whenever his tournament comes to an end. Well, if you're intending to go all the way, Danil, those cakes will have gone off.
Mm.
I think that's maybe he's just assuming that the prize money will probably get him a few more if he needs it.
I mean, sure, but don't jump the gun and buy the cakes in advance then.
Maybe it focuses his mind. Maybe he's looking at those cakes in the corner of the room and thinking, if I win this title, I get to have those. And if I don't, I get to just have them anyway.
And it's not just cake. He said he's got tiramisu.
Yeah.
And other sugary delights.
Yes. A sweet tooth. He now plays Mackenzie McDonald in the fourth round. He's a heck of a story, Mackenzie McDonald. It's his first time in the fourth round of a slam. He beat Lloyd Harris, the South African, in straight sets. Mackenzie McDonald tore a hamstring in a doubles match at Roland Garros 2019, which is a massive injury. That can end careers. He had to have a very major surgery. He couldn't walk for 2 months. In terms of sort of building up the strength and the loading he could do on that leg, it took months and months, and then didn't play for the whole of 2019. And then I don't know if you've heard, but a pandemic happened. So it's been a rotten old time for Mackenzie McDonald. But here he is in the fourth round of a slam for the first time. And Medvedev was asked about McDonald, and he said he plays a bit like Roger, meaning Federer. And this was put to Mackenzie McDonald, and he said, that's probably the best compliment I've ever gotten.
With a huge smile on his face, he said.
Yes, I can't remember him watching him. Of course, he played Dan Evans.
Oh,
didn't
David,
he?
I can. I commentated on Mackenzie McDonald against Milos Raonic at Wimbledon 2018, and it was dreadful.
I mean, he does not play like Federer.
No,
I mean, not even close to playing like Federer.
No,
but he's a maximizer and a good player. But the comparison
never heard
is
Federer
a strange
called
one.
A maximizer before.
Well, no, he plays nothing like Roger Federer.
Is he sure he's got the right Roger?
But I'm. Yeah, who else could it be? Roger Moore?
I don't know another
Roger
tennis
Daltrey.
Player called Roger. But something's up. I don't know. I need to go and watch Mackenzie McDonald
anyway,
just to put it out of my mind.
It's just a mind game for Medvedev.
Yeah, inaccurate or not, it obviously meant a lot to him, that compliment. So I'm pleased. I'm pleased he enjoyed it.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Moving on to the women's side of things, where should we start? Where would you like to start with this?
Ash Barty.
Okay.
Who I think is who I think benefited from no crowd today, and I'm sure that's might be a bit awkward, and I think she might have even admitted that actually afterwards.
She did. Yeah. She said, David, in her on-court interview with Casey Delacqua, maybe it's a little rude of me, but I quite like the sound. I love the crowd, but I love the sound that the ball makes. It sounds a little bit like practice.
You get to fully appreciate her game in the silence. Of course, this is the first time we've ever seen it, because she didn't play in any of the pandemic tournaments at all. And if you love watching somebody go about their craft, watching her in silence against somebody who just doesn't have that in her game, in Ekaterina Alexandrova, I just loved it. I was just watching all these options that are clearly before her eyes, and her choosing which one to go with in this silence. I just loved it.
It wasn't without its little wobbles, breakdown in both sets. Is that just because Alexandra is a decent player on a very decent, confident run of form, rather than any worry about Ash Barty, whose right thigh is still very heavily strapped?
Yeah, I mean, there was certainly some initial worry, I would say, in the match. Alexandra jumped out to a 2-love lead, and I was certainly thinking, oh goodness, is Ash Barty's leg a problem here? But it kind of reminded me of the third round match, actually, that Barty played last year at the Australian Open, when she played Rybakina, who came in on this incredibly strong run of form and is a big hitter and has weapons. And I think people thought maybe she could cause Barty some problems. But you realise when you watch this match that Barty, I think Hannah Wilkes might have used the word instrument on our Twitter to describe the weapons. And Barty is a perfectly tuned instrument. Every shot is note perfect and well chosen, and you know what it's going to be. Whereas Alexandrova is an out of tune instrument. Occasionally she'll hit the right note and she'll hit a blazing winner, and yet a lot of the time she'll just hit a massive unforced error as well, and she can't sustain it in the way that Barty can. And by the end, Barty was sort of carving her up and moving her all around the court. And I agree with David, it was a joy to watch her play like that.
She now plays Shelby Rogers, who beat Annette Contaveit 6-4, 6-3 in the big match of the day. They got the top billing on Rod Laver Arena. I'm not sure we'll ever know why, with all due respect to those two. Shelby Rogers being happy is a very infectious thing, isn't it? And she's been through a lot injury-wise. She had a run to the fourth round at the US Open as well last year. These are big results for her. It's a very different game to Ash Barty's, isn't it? In terms of, it's kind of the opposite of everything you've just said in terms of options. She's going to do what she's going to do. Big hitter. Movement is not her forte so much, but it's somehow pleasing to see her doing well.
Oh, she seems really nice. She's going to have to try to blow Barty off the court with power. The problem is, I'm sure that's what Alexandrova thought, and I'm sure that's what Rybakina thought last year. The problem you have is that you're constantly off balance. It's really hard to generate blistering power against somebody who's just redirecting the ball and putting it in horrible places. So, bless you. I think that's a problem for any of these big hitters.
Yeah, I'm not sure that works against Ash Barty.
No, I just, I think if you are Naomi Osaka and you have movement as well, or you are Serena Williams and maybe Aryna Sabalenka, who have such overwhelming power that you may not get your racket on the ball a lot of the time, certainly off the serve, then that's a different story. But I think if you're an aggressive baseliner, you're going to just end up hitting shots you don't want to be hitting a lot of the time off your ankles.
Well, good luck, Shelby Rogers, in her first ever fourth round at the Australian Open. That will be in a couple of days' time. Bad day for Estonians. Kontaveit lost, as I said, as did Kaia Kanepi. She held too much points in that match against Donna Vekic, who's into the fourth round of the Australian Open, also for the first time.
She great fight re- back.
Really great fight back, and she was so emotional afterwards, Vekic.
I was really taken by that comeback because it's not like Kanepi blew it, I didn't think. I saw the closing stages of it, and it was so, so close. And I've often thought of Vekic as somebody who is maybe a little unable to handle the physicality of some of these matches, and yet she's up against one of the most brutal hitters in a really difficult physical match, and she wouldn't back down, and she overcame her. I thought it was really something.
Yeah, she was all heart. As you said in that interview, she was so emotional. She could barely get words out, and then there was some backstage footage, as there always is at the Australian Open, and she was having a little cry in the corridor just off the court. She put her bags down and just, it meant so much to her to dig that one out, I think.
But who does she play next, David?
Oh, well, it's Jen Brady, isn't it?
Oh, hang on. It's Jen now.
Yeah, you know. And she's just destroyed another opponent.
Yeah, middling America. Middling American having a decent run during a pandemic.
Until
she's still having a decent run during a pandemic, David.
Well, she is, yeah. You know, we try to underplay things, you know.
She's beaten Kaia Juvan in straight sets. This match played on day six of the tournament, and she faced her first break point.
And that was a six. No, hold on a minute. I think that was about a 17-minute game that she fought her way out of, and I mean it was incredible, really. But she. She just looks so at home, and almost now that there's no crowd, it's even more familiar because these are the circumstances with which she burst on the scene last summer and won that title and ended up in the semifinals of the US Open. Let's not forget it was Naomi Osaka that she played. I mean, that's how well she was playing to go toe-to-toe and nearly beat Osaka. So, I mean, I would make her the favourite against Vekic. I mean, I've got her in the semi-finals. So, she's playing really, really well.
She was one of back-to-back winners on the John Cain Arena. Jessica Pegula won on that court just before her and wrote on the camera as she was leaving the court, "Let's go, Jen Brady." So that worked, didn't it? Pegula... sorry, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, I really enjoy the spirit and the camaraderie between those American women. I mean, you've got Brady, Pegula and Shelby Rogers all in that top half, and they've all really improved over the last year to 18 months. They've developed into reliable players on the tour who can have big wins and go pretty deep in slams, and they seem to really root for each other. As you said, they're writing each other's names on the camera, and I just really like the atmosphere between them.
It's a very collegiate spirit, isn't it? And of course, Jen Brady came through. She was I think they're called the Bruins, the UCLA tennis team. And Mackenzie McDonald came through, was a Bruins player as well. So it does have that vibe about it. Pegula beat Kristina Mladenovic 6-2, 6-1. She's into the second week of a major for the first time in her career and has done so without dropping a set. Andrew said on Twitter, "It's a level of dominance reminiscent of the Buffalo Bills versus the Jets."
And of course, she owns the Buffalo Bills, and he's a Buffalo Bills supporter. So that...
yes, who are the Jets though?
New York Jets.
Yeah. Right, so that's a derby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I asked Andrew in the middle of the night what she is like as a player, because I haven't really seen a lot of Pegula. And
he's like our Pegula correspondent.
He is a bit. And he said, I said, you know, how does she compare to Brady, for instance? I'm looking for tips, you know, to see if I can maybe snare another one to my little group. But Andrew said that the thing is she hits the ball much, much flatter, and she's got one of the smallest clearances over the net of all the players. So if it goes off, it can go off in a big way, whereas with Brady, there's just more margin for error because it's much more of a whippy, topspin-based game.
I mean, she's lost 13 games in 3 matches, Pegula, against Azarenka, Stoza, and who was it today? Kiki Mladenovic. I mean, those are tough opponents that she's swatted away. And it's kind of become a theme now, isn't it? Whenever we mention Pegula, we mention the Buffalo Bills, because that was kind of one of the only things we knew about her a year ago or so. But she gave some really interesting comments about the fact that her parents have these links to sports, and when she was a bit younger, sort of making her way in her career, she really wanted to break away and not be associated with her parents and sort of form her own identity. Whereas now she's really tried to embrace the fact that she's got these family ties. And obviously she's very aware that she's got, you know, a privileged upbringing, and, you know, she had loads of money and could afford to travel to tournaments and that kind of thing. But there was part of her that needed to become herself rather than just be the daughter of the Buffalo Bills owners, if that makes sense. And I think she's kind of realizing that now, and yeah, she's growing into herself, and her results are following.
That's really interesting. She said on the court that she made an effort to completely change her mindset for 2021 from, in her own words, trying to win one round at a slam to thinking, why can't I go deep at a slam? Well, that's worked.
Yeah.
Turns out it's really simple to just
do more of that.
Yeah. Jessica Pegula now plays Alina Svitolina, who dispatched Yulia Putintseva 6-4, 6-love. That should be a good match. It's quite a contrast, Pegula against Svitolina.
That's what I'm pleased about, really, because those are the matches that are the best to watch, aren't they, really? I find Svitolina against another retriever or counterpuncher quite a hard watch sometimes. And yet, put her up against a big hitter, and I find it's really fascinating.
Mm. Yeah, well, that'll be in 2 days' time. What else do we have in the top half of the women's draw? We have Karolina Pliskova has crashed out 7-5, 7-5. To Karolina Mukova. I'm questioning that now. It is Karolina, isn't it? I've not
it
just
is.
Got Karolina on the brain.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
Yeah. This was a dramatic one. I didn't sort of consciously stay up to watch this. I generally stay up to watch the first match of the night, and this was the one on the Rod Laver Arena. It was eventful for Pliskova. So she loses the first set. It was quite nip and tuck, that first set. She gets a first warning for racket abuse, for throwing her racket. Then she heads off the court after the first set for a bathroom break. She takes that racket with her and throws it down in the tunnel, the same racket, and she receives a point penalty for a second warning. She was unaware that you could receive 2 warnings for abusing the same racket. I think she thought it had to be different rackets.
Wow.
She wasn't particularly complaining about that.
I wasn't aware of that.
Didn't she also say something like, I thought off the court I could do whatever I like?
Yeah. Who knows what she did in the bathroom? So that happens, and it seems very much to have worked. She comes back on court after the bathroom break and after the racket abuse, and point penalty or not, she goes 5-love up in the second set and then loses 7 games in a row to lose the match. She served for that set twice. She had 2 set points. In the end, she hit 40 unforced errors, only 23 winners, 10 double faults, As Andrew said on Twitter, and I completely agree with this, no rhythm, no energy, no plan B. And look, that was partly down to Mukova. She didn't give her any rhythm. I love Mukova's game. I love her mentality on the court. But it's now been 2 years since Pliskova has reached a slam quarterfinal. And again, Andrew said on Twitter, I imagine this is a result that is going to prompt some soul searching for Pliskova. So I went to her press conference, and I know, you know, she's very straightforward, and she doesn't often give that much in terms of emotion, but it was a strikingly un-soul searchy press conference. I thought it was very much like, yeah, I'm not playing my best, and there's some things I need to work on, and I'm disappointed about today, but you know, it happens, and she played well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it might just be her way, and then she might be a mess when she goes home, and this might be the start of the journey that ends up making her fulfilled potential. But well, it's been going on for years, hasn't it? At Grand Slams, we were talking about expectations, and I went back and had a look at all of the predictions from 2017, 2018, and 2019 that I made about Pliskova, because I found one where I put her in the final in my predictions, and that was in the Australian Open last year. I thought she'd get to the final, so obviously I'd been won over by that. But before that, not once. I'd got her in quarterfinals and then one semi-final.
You might not have done specifics, David, but I vividly remember you saying that you saw Grand Slam finals between the Pliskova sisters.
Yeah, no, you're right.
In your crystal ball.
Yeah, no, this would be probably going back to about 2017.
To be fair,
like
it was
that.
When I think that was off the back of Karolina Pliskova reaching that US Open final.
Mm, yeah.
And to be fair, if you'd asked anybody then,
I think Christina,
will she reach more?
Christina started a season, and I remember her beating Dominika Sibulkova. And I was just, it was incredible how well she played that day. And I couldn't understand why these two weren't right at the top of the game. I couldn't understand it. I still can't really in some ways, but
I mean,
there's something missing. And now I think it's probably become, I don't know what you two think, it must be now a really big psychological barrier that when she's getting to these slams that she's waiting for it to go wrong or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, with her game and her serve, you shouldn't be losing five love leads against anyone. That's psychological, for sure.
And works both ways, doesn't it? Because opponents know that she's vulnerable now, and
particularly opponents that know her inside out, as Karolina Mukova does.
Yeah, and they can sense a little bit of weakness, I'm sure. And look, her strategy has been changing coach. Pliskova doesn't turn up at a tournament playing any differently ever. When it's on, she's very, very good, and tends to be on just the week before a slam. Not this year, but that's been her trademark over the last couple of seasons, and that's I think one of the things which has kept giving us belief that she would finally crack it at a slam. But I don't see much internal motivation to want to develop as a tennis player, and I don't know, it strikes me that she's often thought, oh well, changing a coach, that will be the fresh impetus that I need, and that is just, it's just not working. I think eventually you've got to just look at yourself a little bit more. Otherwise, it's just going to keep happening. And look, she's had a great career. She has reached a Grand Slam final. She's been world number one. She's won big titles. But as long as she doesn't overcome this record at slams, there will always be that question mark, I think, next to her name.
Mukova, who really was good, she now plays Elise Mertens, who destroyed Belinda Bencic 6-2, 6-1. Also from our Twitter, Mertens so often looks brilliant at a major right up to the point that she doesn't.
Yeah.
Which is it, isn't it? And maybe that point will be later in this slam than in other slams, but she's a bit Rublev-like. She really beats the people that she's supposed to beat.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison, and probably the reason she's not got the ranking of Rublev is because there's more people like that in the women's game. That was for me the starkest match yet in terms of illustrating that the rankings and the seedings are a little bit all over the place. I couldn't believe that Bengtsics was seeded 7 spots higher than Mertens. She's obviously got a lot of 2019 points still on her ranking, Bengtsics. I think particularly from, is it Shenzhen? I think she did well in Shenzhen in 2019. But Mertens has been such a relevant player for the last year. She won 34 matches last season and Bengtsics won 8. Mertens, for me, was a heavy favourite going into that match. I didn't think it would be as one-sided as it was. But yeah, it was just really striking when you saw those two seedings next to their names.
That's another interesting fourth-round match, Mertens against Mukova. They all are, really. There's none now that I'm not looking forward to. I'm hopeful that from now on things will kind of even up a bit in terms of the two halves of things.
There is obviously still this discrepancy between the two halves. I mean, I think all the matches are interesting, but in the top half of the women's draw, there's one Grand Slam final appearance, and that's Ash Barty. And in the bottom half, there's 47 Grand Slam final appearances. Obviously, Serena accounts for a lot of those, but you've also got Halep, Świątek, Vondrosheva, Osaka and Muguruza, who've all reached
Grand Slam
finals.
And that's not even Matt's stat.
To be honest, that is better than Matt's stat. I came out with Matt's stat early today and found this one late, and this one is better.
Another quality tease.
Get on the newsletter.
How's this for a tease of what we'll be talking about on tomorrow's podcast? This is the day 7 order of play at the Australian Open. Kicks off at midnight UK time with Garbini Muguruza against Naomi Osaka on the Rod Laver Arena.
Okay, then.
Then it's Arina Sabalenka against Serena Williams.
Right, yep. Up for that.
Sabalenka, incidentally, the bookie's favourite for that one. Not sure how I feel about that. Then it's Dominic Thiem against Grigor Dimitrov.
Mm-hmm.
Then the night session is Iga Świątek against Simona Halep.
Yes, please.
Then it's Novak Djokovic against Milos Raonic, which ordinarily wouldn't be a yes, please, but it might be a bit more interesting. Not that I'm hoping that Djokovic... I mean, I hope he steps onto the court fully fit tomorrow, but the news that we've had, this is from ESPN, is that he came to Melbourne Park on Saturday to seek approval from Tennis Australia to get a scan. I think because of lockdown rules, approval was required. A scan on his oblique, and he didn't practice. I hope he's fully fit. But that matchup with Raonic would ordinarily have, frankly, no intrigue surrounding it at all because Djokovic just beats Raonic easily, but it's, you know, potentially more of a story tomorrow one way or another. The Yvonne Goolagong Arena starts with Shea against Vondrosheva.
Oh, I mean, I need two screens then. Right, carry on.
Then Auger Aliassime against Aslan Karatsev.
Catherine's new favourite, look.
Yeah. Then there is some doubles featuring Nick Kyrgios and Thanasi Kokkinakis. So that's happening. And then it's Dusan Lajovic against Alexander Zverev. Incidentally, Herbert Mahou are going on well in the doubles. They're first up on court 3, Matt, if you want to catch a bit of that. And just checking out the John Cain Arena. No, this is when the John Cain Arena goes out of commission.
No. Okay.
Wow. It suddenly happens, doesn't it? It goes from tennis everywhere to, wow, tennis... some places and not others.
Matt and I have been discussing strategy about how to consume all of this, given that I have to commentate on the night session starting at 8 a.m. UK time. We're on air from 7 on BBC Radio 5 Live, Sports Extra. And I've decided it's 3 in the afternoon right now. If I go to bed at 6 p.m., I can have 6 hours sleep and wake up at midnight.
You could go to bed even a bit earlier than that, David. I mean, what time West Brom playing today?
They're not. Tomorrow, so I'm all right.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in the clear.
What's your strategy, Catherine?
I'm just going to stay up for as long as I can.
Okay.
Might even do an all-nighter.
So there may be not a podcast tomorrow, folks.
I'm a little bit worried about a potential lull. If there's a lull, then I probably won't be able to keep my eyes open. I need the hits to keep coming.
Right. Okay.
I'll send you some Daniil Medvedev gifts to keep you going.
Yes, please. That would be great. Just a final bit of tennis news for you. Andy Murray is playing in a challenger event in Biella.
Yep.
Which is in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This week. And he's in the semifinals. And in that semifinal, he will play Matthias Borg, who I remember him playing at the French Open in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
The year he reached the final, I think it was one of those matches where, as Boris Becker referenced after his charge, Djokovic beat Andy Murray in the final, he expended a lot of extraneous time and drama on the court.
It was Borg and Stepanek, back-to-back five setters in the first two rounds.
Yes.
We miss Andy Murray.
We do. He's the top seed at that semi-finals. He beat Blaz Rola in his quarterfinal, and before that he'd beaten Maximilian Martyr. I think you can watch that via the ATP Challenger website.
Yeah. So just a line that from Mike Dixon that really resonated with me, that here's Andy Murray with three Sports Personality of the Year awards. He's a Knight of the Realm. He's a multimillionaire. He's won Grand Slam titles, Davis Cup, two Olympic golds. And there he is, fighting his backside off in a challenger whilst the Australian Open's going on. I mean, it says everything about his appetite, doesn't it? And good luck to him.
Yeah, it's his personal way of dealing with FOMO. it's great. So, if you want to follow his progress, you can do. We'll be back. We'll keep you updated on it. And we'll be back with another Grand Slam Daily tomorrow when Crumble will still be our mascot. Hello, Crumble. Hope you enjoyed Crumble content in our newsletter. If you don't get our newsletter, you should. Slightly underwhelming Matt stat coming up today, so get yourself signed up.
Link in the show notes.
And definitely underwhelming predictions coming every day.
Oh, yeah.
No more Radu Albot for me. Zeus is my mascot. Hello, Zeus. And Billie Jean King is Billie Jean. She's behaved for this podcast. It was looking dicey in the lead up, but she fell asleep at just the right moment. Rogue is yours, David.
Yeah, right, Rogue.
And Scousel Mousel is yours, Matt.
Yes. Hello, Scousel Mousel.
Chris Albert Lee is our top bloke executive producer. And our shout outs today, Matt, are for
Fiona Cool.
No.
I mean, Fiona, you're so cool. That's so cool.
David. I mean, don't need to say it.
Yeah, but I did. I want it.
It's C-O-U-L-L. Well, so I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
That, I mean, great. We don't need to say anything about that. It's brilliant.
David's already ruined it.
Now, I apologise for my pronunciation of this name. Teja Baya? Teja Baya? I'm really not sure.
We're in Sasha Bayan territory here, aren't we?
T-E-J-A-B-A-Y-Y-A. Teja?
We'll go with that.
What was the pronunciation of Sasha Bayan that you heard again, Matt?
Sasha Bayan.
It's not that.
Could we do something Azerbaijani with this name?
Let's try not to offend. Maybe I should say that to myself. Taya, thanks ever so much for supporting the podcast.
Taya or Teja, whatever way around it is, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And finally, Layla, backer number 262.
Just Layla.
Just right, Layla. Like the song. No, not like the song. Spelt differently.
Thanks, Layla. What song's that? Sing it.
Is it
you think of Lila by Oasis?
No. Layla, you got me on my knees, Layla.
Oh yes,
that's the first time I've ever heard Matt sing.
It is. What a note to finish on.
Oh God.
This slightly disappointing podcast has all been worth it. Join us for more tomorrow when we'll try and follow that, but we'll probably fail. We'll speak to you then.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.